You're listening to the Wanderlust Swingers podcast with Aussie hosts Kate and Daryl. If you're curious about exploring your sexuality or the swinging, hot-wifing and non-monogamous lifestyle, you've definitely come to the right podcast. Or maybe you just love travel adventures. Either way, we share our personal, sometimes juicy, sexy stories as well as swingers club and event reviews, interviews with other sassy people and of course our global swinging adventures. We try to bring you a look into the diverse lifestyle that the swinging and non-monogamous community has. We hope you enjoy. Now let's get into the episode. G'day everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Wanderlust Swingers podcast. Today's episode is a new volume of our Swingers Health. So this is Swingers Health Volume 5, Part 1. This one's all about mental health and I have two absolute fantastic experts on the line. I'm joined by Jason and Misha from the Expansive Connection team. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
That's right, everybody. I've got not one, but two experts on the line today to talk to me about mental health. Yes, I'm shaking in my boots because I do have a lot of spiders and skeletons in my closet. But today's episode is all about mental health. It's another episode on our Swingers Health series. In this volume, we're going to be digging into the fascinating world of non-monogamy, but really starting to talk about things like communication, boundaries, conflict resolution, and more. As we know, the swingers lifestyle or alternative lifestyles in general are multifaceted, and I'm really excited to dig into a little bit more about our experts today on the line. So I'm going to hand it over perhaps to Misha to start. Misha, if you want to give us a little bit of an introduction into yourself, not just on a personal level and your journey, but perhaps a little bit about the work that you do.
Okay. Hi, I am one of the coaches with Expansive Connection. I've been with them since 2020. And although I am licensed and trained as a marriage and family therapist in this capacity, where we work with lots of people in the ethically non-monogamous and any identifier underneath that umbrella community, I operate mainly as a coach. And so with Expansive Connection, we have worked with individuals, couples, moresomes, helping people to just figure out who they want to be and how they want to show up with ethical non-monogamy in their life, like how they want to be with partners, how they want to show up individually, how they want to maybe have moresomes and figure out how that looks while they're walking in their daily lives, because it doesn't just stay in the bedroom. Sometimes we learn things probably from our experiences and bring them back into our regular day life and vice versa.
And how about yourself, Jason? Over to you if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, and some of the things that you specialize in, perhaps.
Sure. I have a clinical training in social work. Did not enter clinical work until relatively recently as I joined the Expansive Connection team. But a lot of my experience has been over the past 7 to 8 years being exploring non-monogamy myself. So my wife and I of 23 years opened up about 7 years ago. And dabbled very lightly in the swinging lifestyle, but quickly transitioned a little more to a classic open relationship and then moved into more of the polyamory space, where we've been for 2.5 years now. And it has been kind of settled in, I would say, to that space. But over the time, have learned a tremendous amount on our own through every faceplant that you could possibly imagine, and working with therapists on our own to ensure that our journey is as healthy and successful as possible, and learned a lot along the way and felt like I had something to offer. So bringing those social work skills back into the forefront. And I wanted to bring some of those experiences to others and see how it could help us. So I was invited to join the Expansive Connection team relatively recently, a few months ago. And I'm excited to bring that personal experience and professional background to this work as well.
Yeah, we were super excited because there's so many gentlemen that we work with. They're like, I'd like to work with another man. And we were like, oh, we've got you now. Like, that's covered. So we're super excited that he's part of the team.
Thank you.
Welcome to the team, Jason. We're happy to have you on the show, particularly because as we've just kind of gone through all of our own personal journeys here, there is a lot of diversity on today's episode. And I think that's going to be really robust for the fact that we are going to be talking about mental health and boundaries and conflict resolution, because I think we all do experience things whilst very similar in the different alternative relationships we have. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some differences too. So we're going to maybe see some of those differences as we get into the episode today. But how has being non-monogamous personally impacted your lives and relationships?
Well, I'll start with that one. I would say it's been a really positive boon. I think it's resulted in a lot of personal and inner work and growth on my part. And I think any relationship is going to benefit from your own personal work that you do and personal growth. And that self-focus isn't so much of a selfish in a bad way. It's more of like, I'm going to focus on myself so that I can bring my best self to my relationships and my any kind of relationship that I'm in. So it has deepened the relationship that I have with my wife. It has also created space for me to cultivate very rich relationships and deep relationships with others too. So I have a partner as well. And outside of that, it's almost like it's been like a lifestyle, not lifestyle in the swinging way, but lifestyle kind of curation way. Like I've been able to curate my life in a way that brings a lot of value and meaning to me. So overall, it has expanded and enriched every relationship in my entire life. Anything from very deep relationships to even more casual style relationships from work and even friends. So it's a lot of positive. It's been arduous to get there, and it's still a journey. So it's never ending. But overall, it's been wonderful.
I don't know about you, Jason, but there's some days I wake up and I'm like, why did I choose to do this again? Like today feels really hard, and so. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. I tortured myself. Some of the things that I have, like especially when I get to those moments where sometimes they feel overwhelming or I have to dig a little deeper, I remember that there's fruits of the lifestyle and there's fruits of being E&M or poly or anything else like that. And so one of the things that I've personally found is that it makes me see myself. It's such a good mirror for who you are and how you show up in relationships. And even if you like things, like I think in monogamous relationships, we do a really great job of creating this beautiful dance that allows us to move around our attachment issues or around digging in deeper to figure out why we do what we do. And if it's actually working, you know, we've just figured out like the proper steps to avoid all the pitfalls. It doesn't make us grow being in this relationship dynamic requires that you look at yourself. It requires that you do grow. It does require that you learn a new dance with your partner and actually address like attachment issues and how you show up. And if you're treating them based off of your values and their values in the relationship. It also challenged my communication skills. I was like, I'm a really great communicator. Are you kidding me? And then I started doing this and I was like, oh no, I could, yeah. I could probably go a little deeper. Your ability to be vulnerable and to be honest and authentic is kind of pushed to a different level in this space.
Now, the podcast listeners can't actually see me nodding my head when the both of you are talking and sometimes raising my eyebrows and taking notes. So I feel like the both of you, me, Shay, Jason, you're going to see a lot of that on today's episode is me nodding and writing things down. I absolutely love the concept of it being a mirror, Miche, because when we first started in our journey in the lifestyle, I was quite a jealous person, but I couldn't really understand why. And through some therapy and some cognitive behavioral, I understood that one of my schemas was like an abandonment issue and all these mm-hmm. sorts of things. And then I started, you're right, I had this mirror and all of these new inputs around me. And I went, aha, this is why I am the way that I am. And this is going to be my trigger or my reaction to something. And it was confronting to actually work through those things with Daryl to openly admit, mm-hmm. I'm jealous right now. I'm having a trigger. And I remember it being very, very difficult in those first few years. And now it's kind of subsided a little bit. I've become a bit more aware of myself. You know, maybe it's an age thing as well. And so I have more ease to talk about that. But you both just said some fabulous things about the lifestyle, but I do want to put you on the hot seat. Now, throughout the episode today, I am going to put you on the hot seat. This is where I like to ask some questions that might be a little bit uncomfortable, might be a little bit taboo. I'm actually going to start with Jason on this one because, Jason, you did start that whole sentence with some really, really positive things. And only at the very end did you kind of say, yeah, and also things have been a little bit hard. What we know is that the lifestyle can be challenging. So do you recall a specific challenge or misunderstanding on your own journey that has really taught you a valuable lesson?
You know, this question is almost somewhat hard to answer because there are so many. So I know I did give a positive brush when I was describing, but all of that is within the context of all of the quote unquote growth opportunities that have come along the way.
Absolutely.
And there have been so many that sometimes it's even hard to distill down good examples. I can go anything from the very first time I saw my wife kiss somebody else that I thought I was going to be okay with. And when I actually saw it in real life and saw how another man kind of treated her, I had never seen that before. And this was something as relatively now benign as a kiss, but that is a huge thing the very first time that you see that, if you've been with somebody for a really long time. And that was an experience that I just have this visual in my head, and I will never, ever forget it. I'm like, why are you treating her that way? Why are you touching her that way? She didn't ask for that. I don't do that.
Yep.
And I had to learn, even in that moment, to be like, well, I can't freak out right now. I just need to figure out what is my limit? And when can I raise my hand and say, I think we need to exit. And I really need some support here. All the way to the very first time she went on a solo date for many hours. And I was on the ceiling freaking out the entire time waiting for her to come home. Miche mentioned the attachment issues. Mm. I mean, those are the things that really came to the surface.
Yeah.
I realized how attached I am to this partner of mine that I've been with forever, and how much even of my identity is wrapped up in that attachment with her. So some of those realizations are only going to come up when you actually experience these things. You can do everything you can to prepare intellectually and reading and talking, but until you actually experience it and have that internal, I felt like I was being ripped apart, and learning how to understand what are those feelings, how to describe them, and how to communicate them in such a way that I don't weaponize them. And sometimes you only realize how you do that through weaponizing them and realizing the impact of that on your partner. So the 7 years has not been smooth by any stretch of the imagination, but sometimes it's definitely through those experiences and getting to the other side and realizing, hey, we're still good. And in fact, we're actually better now that we work through that. So but those are just two examples that I can think of. The first time I saw her kiss somebody, and the first time she went on a solo date where I just completely freaked out.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Okay, I'll go. Mine's probably not as amazingly weighty as yours, Jason. I am a recovering control freak. And so when I go to play with other people, I think in the very beginning, I was like, well, I need things to go in a certain order. And we have to make sure that all of these boxes have been checked off. And what it actually did was I was trying to simmer down my anxiety by controlling my environment or controlling the direction that things were going to go. Kept me from having a good time. Probably kept me from enjoying just connections with people and however they showed up or however they played out. And so I felt like there should be a destination, that we're supposed to get to, kind of like that relationship escalator thing, whether it's we're going to go play definitely, or maybe we'll just be flirty friends, letting it be wherever it was. Allowed me to just let my anxiety go. And I had to take my hands off the wheel and just be excited to be with other people. That for me, who this girl with some anxiety, it definitely helped.
All right, so we've got two fabulous segments that we're going to really dig into today. The first segment is about communication, and the second segment is about resentment. I know, guys, I know this seems super heavy. Bear with us, though, because there's going to be tidbits and gems in here as we dig into these topics, particularly for everyone. I know that you thought I was about to say particularly for newbies, but you're wrong there, because we all do get it wrong continuously because it is a journey. So communication, first of all, I know what the cliche is, right? People say communicate, 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 as much as people say location, location, location when it comes to real estate. Yes, fine, we've heard it, whatever, but let's really get into it. What are the intricacies of effective communication, setting boundaries, maintaining open and honest conversations? Jason just mentioned earlier in the introduction about seeing his partner experience things for the first time and feeling a certain kind of way about that. And it's then, well, when do you communicate that with your partner? So how do you define effective communication within the context of the alternative lifestyle, swingers, polyamory, etc.? And why really, truly is communication so crucial?
I think you really fuck it up. You don't have the communication.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to start that off. Yeah, I think communication, we can take it for granted when you're coming from your monogamous world as you try to transition into a non-monogamous space. And I like to think of it as more of it's a conscious communication. It's learning how to speak the things that maybe just go unsaid for most of your life, bringing to conscious awareness those things, that those narratives that you spin out in your mind, and trying to stop that from happening, and even speaking them out into the world so that they don't have control over you. I think that's what happens, especially in non-monogamy, is unsubstantiated narratives start to build up in your head because you're feeling a certain way. And then those narratives lead you to react in a given way with your partner. So learning how to stop that narrative from spinning up when you have a frustrating feeling, and instead learning how to communicate that feeling to your partner in a way that your partner can receive, absent of meaning, absent of value per se, that it's like, hey, I just feel uncomfortable. I'm not exactly sure why. I just saw this thing for the first time. I thought it was going to be fine and I'm not. I now feel uncomfortable. Can we just talk about it? Doesn't mean anything that, you know, happened that was wrong. Doesn't mean we need to, you know, stop the ship right away. Can we just sit down and kind of take a quick little pause and talk about it? So I think communication around learning that sometimes that's all it takes. I mean, I hate to trivialize something so important, but actually sometimes there's a lot of power in just being able to put that out there into the world and have it be received in a kind way from somebody who is one of your closest confidants, most likely, and have them say, oh yeah, that makes sense. And sometimes, honestly, sometimes that's all it is. That's all it takes. But it's how that delivery is made, how that communication delivery is made to your partner.
Let's touch on that then. You said how the delivery is made. Let's, as a group, maybe talk about some of the communication mistakes we've seen. But I'm going to hand it over to the both of you, though, to talk about how these could have been avoided, because I have been somebody who's made a lot of communication mistakes in the past 10 years of my journey. So what are some of the common mistakes, and how can we avoid them in real life terms? So I actually want to know, physically, emotionally, how can we actually give us some tools? Help us. How can we avoid them?
I love the fact that he stated that there's like a narrative in your head. Our brains will make sense of things, right? And normally if we look over and our partner's having maybe what we consider to be too much fun with someone else, we might be like, oh, like that too much fun is reserved for me. Or you get your lid flipped. You're like, they just did this weird like tongue twirl thing. I've never seen this tongue twirl thing, you know, and you're just like, what's going on here? A lot of times when we see our partners doing something different or new or unexpected or just hits us differently, there are sense of community, there are shelter, there are safe space, and we think that's being threatened and taken away from us. So what happens with that is that our lids get flipped, right? And so our bodies are saying like, bear the hatches, we're done, this is dangerous, we're going to lose things. And so we have to start figuring out how to regulate ourselves so that we can at least have effective communication with the other person. But you can't do that when you are triggered to the hilt. And so one of the things that I know that I've found with other people is like, you can't, it's really difficult. You know, the reason people shout at each other is because they can't hear each other. Mm-hmm. Right? Isn't that the irony of it? We're shouting because we can't actually hear each other. So how do you begin to calm down that concoction of hormones and emotions and fear that's running around in your head? And so sometimes it is co-regulating, like, I don't want to talk about this right now, but maybe I just need a really tight cuddle. Sometimes that looks like I need 10 to 15 minutes to just go do something that matches my heart rate. So that might be like swimming in the pool or walking around the hotel really fast or going for a jog. Maybe it is doing like a nice fast-paced yoga meditative state until you're able to have a conversation with someone where you all are able to hear each other. Just be able to put those lids back down a little bit. I don't know about anybody else, but my favorite thing to do is eat ice cream and go for a walk, right? So I'm doing body temperature changes. I'm also moving my body. I'm also getting grounded. It's like one of my favorite, like all encompassing things. So if you guys ever see me at a hotel takeover and I'm eating ice cream and I'm walking, just let me be. I'm putting my lid back down. So those are the things I think about. Also, one of the things that Jason said that I thought was amazing was like assigning judgment to things. And so one of the things that sometimes I find helpful for people who, like, if you assign judgment to something immediately, then your wall is up. The thing that helps to keep the wall down or slow it from like jumping up is shifting from assigning blame and judgment to curiosity. What about this did I miss? Can I see this in a different light? Maybe I don't have all of the information and facts to make that judgment. And so we're giving our partner the benefit of the doubt by sitting in curiosity.
Misha, you just said there, I don't want to talk about it right now. And you also then gave the example of let you be if I see you walking around with ice cream and walking, which I'm just made a mental note of. How would one person in the relationship who needs, and there's probably a very specific term for this, but if I need kind of closure or I need to argue or I need to talk now, and your partner is more of a, I need 10 minutes, I need an hour, and then I will regulate and come back to you. How does that work when you've got two very polarizing, because the person who wants it fixed now is going to struggle to shut up and is going to keep asking questions, keep nagging, keep picking. What advice would you give to that couple? And the reason I'm asking that is because that is Daryl and my dynamic. So feel free to school me.
For most people who are anxious, like it's not going to be your day. Like the thing you have to do is let that person take their 10 minutes, because if not, you're just in the pursuer withdrawal cycle, right? Where you're like, come back, I want to talk. And the person's like, no. What you have to do is you both have to stop, turn towards each other and say, I'm going to give you your space, right, that you need. And then your partner needs to look at you and say, thank you for that space. I am coming back in exactly 10 minutes. Like it's 4 or 5. I will be back at 4:15 and we will have the conversation. And if you continue to show up at the 4:15 mark, what you do is you build trust in the fact that if you are going to go away and regulate yourself, that you are coming back to have that conversation, because that's like kind of plays off of like abandonment issues a little bit. Like, I don't trust that you're going to come back and resolve this with me. And you're creating a new narrative when you do that.
So the pursuit and withdrawal is what you said. So that's, so I have to do some more research on that. Thank you very much.
I did not coin that. That's Sue Johnson, I believe. And it's pursuer withdrawal cycle. So I'm not that brilliant. It's her, but it's a really good cycle. Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely be looking into that. Can you, one of you maybe share a success story where setting clear boundaries with intentions significantly improved a couple's experience in the swingers lifestyle or alternative relationships?
Sometimes this can be challenging because there's a lot about this. You don't know what you don't know. So sometimes setting up, anticipating boundaries or anticipating kind of this, the kind of walls of safety that you want to put around without actually knowing what you're going to, how you're going to feel in that, can set up a false sense of security. So I think there is a balance to be struck between you want to set up as much as you can these kind of walls of security. But they have to, in my opinion, they have to be flexible and loose, because sometimes they're going to make you think you're going to be okay when you're actually not. And there has to be grace to be offered that you're actually not going to be okay. I've had that experience in my own life where I think I'm going to be fine with how things are kind of set up. The kissing example is a good one. But then it happened. And I'm like, I now that what I thought was going to be safe now can't. Now those boundaries help because they help me articulate, hey, we set this up. Now I don't feel good anymore. Can we please take a step back and talk about it? And to be on the receiving end of that request can sometimes feel like a mandate that you did something wrong or that you kind of missed the mark. And there has to be, I think, learning on the receiving end of those types of requests that this is not an indicator that I fucked up. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. It can be, hey, my teammate here, my partner in this instance, needs my help. And something I did result in a feeling, but it doesn't mean I did anything wrong. Mm. So we're talking about communication strategies that can help to facilitate that type of environment for that healthy back and forth between the two, in this case, a couple, to allow for that pause, that a very, very valuable pause moment in both instances where we can say, let's just pause whatever's going on right now, take a break, and then come back and actually talk about it. Because often this communication can kind of lead to, if you're thinking that you did something wrong, then you're automatically going to go into a defensive place.
Yeah.
I love the idea of a pause. I think there's so many spaces where a pause is so crucial, whether it's you're in a playroom and you're in a big puppy pile and you get overwhelmed, you know, because it's really sexy. That has happened to me before. And I was like, I just need to breathe. So I didn't know that you could do a pause at the time. And so when I left, people thought that I didn't want to play. And so when I came back to what I thought was going to be an amazing puppy pile, there were no puppies and I was all by myself. And if I had been able to say, you know, I would like to pause for a minute and I'm coming back, you guys are just hot. I'm just like, since really this, we've reached another level that I wasn't ready for, I could have continued to play. There's also the pause of like, seeing your partner do something that, you know, you're not ready for or you thought you're ready for. I know I've definitely been like, I can handle this. And I get into it and I'm like, I can handle this. And so what does that pause look like? That might sound different than I just want to play pause. Or even the like, before we even get into it, like Jason said, that's a different pause. Like being able to talk through what those things look like, because people do think it's a mandate or that they have done something wrong. And if you talk about what that looks like beforehand, the defensive walls don't come up as much. One of the things that I liked as well was just an elevator speech. I like this for before people start to play. It keeps me accountable to my own boundaries and it lets other people know how I want to engage with them. And so if I am playing and things shift, in a different direction than what I am comfortable with, I can remember that I've already told everybody what I will engage in, what I won't engage in. And so when I leave or shift or change to the people that I'm playing with, you know, I'm not sitting here wondering if people are perceiving me differently or not, because we've already had the conversation. And that's always been very helpful for me to actually enjoy what I'm engaging in. And I feel like boundaries up front is always a good idea.
That's a really interesting point. And it reminds me of a conversation I had many, many years ago with friends of mine, Jay and Angie. They have a policy where they say what they're comfortable with and what they're interested in doing in the evening. And if there's alcohol involved, or not doing for that matter, and if there's alcohol involved, they do not deviate from this plan. And the reason is because sometimes we'll have these boundaries or these intentions, and then maybe some alcohol comes into play, and then all of a sudden we're feeling a little bit more free. And so they have a policy now where, say, Angie says to Jay, you know what, I'm actually just keen to socialize tonight, and I'm keen to maybe get a little bit flirty on the dance floor, and that's it. And then she has some margaritas, and then all of a sudden she's like, I'm going to go fuck this guy. And then Jay's like, you know what, full stop, hold on a second. You know, here's our intentions. There's now alcohol in play and I'm uncomfortable with this situation. So you kind of just reminded me of that. And I always thought that was great advice.
Yeah. I love a good elevator speed. I'm all for knowing where your boundaries are, eliminating as much anxiety and guesswork out of it as possible. Cause like when the sexy gets really turned on, our brains get stupid. Like that just is what happens. And I can talk myself into some really like my fuck it button is like real accessible, you know? So I can just like, I can tap on that a couple of times. And if I don't have my own boundaries and my own accountability up front, you know, I'm like, what happens if we just like, we don't touch the whole fuck it button? What if we just kind of like dance around it? You know, like, I don't need that. And if your brain gets a little stupid, you know, it's a little easier to get to the other side.
I also loved the great pun. I don't know whether you realize this, but you said pause and puppy pile in the same sentence. And I was like, no, pause and puppies. So a little bit of a pun there. I don't think you quite realized you made that one. Let's talk about some of the things that you're commonly seeing, because as much as we all like to think we are individuals, and we are to an extent, we all do have inputs and outputs that can mirror, can be very similar to each other. When you're thinking about all of the breadth of the clients that you are seeing, what piece of advice do you find yourself time and time again telling your clients when it comes to communication in non-monogamous relationships?
I love this question. Something I find myself telling people is slow down. You do not have to go as quickly as you think. You know, you're going into these situations and kind of to draw on what you just said, Kate, about your friends who have that boundary. Like if we're drinking, we're going to stick very closely to, going to stick exactly to what we said. Let's expand that to say, when you go into these situations, you're going into a situation where you are intentionally going to get drunk. And I don't mean off alcohol. Mm-hmm. You're going into a situation where you are going to have an altered state of mind.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It's called energy. It's called sexual energy. It's called, you know, whatever you want to call it, you are automatically putting yourself into that space. And slowing down when you're already under the influence is really hard.
True.
It's really, really hard. So I tell clients, you do not have to come out of the gate hot. You're going to want to. One of you is going to want to. Chances are in this dynamic, one of you is gas and one of you is the brake.
Yep.
And one of you is going to be one to press that gas pedal. And yes, guess what? And I like to give hard truths to my clients where I say, guess what? Sometimes you might not get what you want. And sometimes you are going to have to back down in service to the greater good and your greater process. Accept that out of the gate. Just know that that is probably going to happen. And if you guys, you can either be a solo actor or you can be in a relationship. You cannot have both.
Jason, I feel like there should be like some church organ music behind what's happening here.
He's just like, preach.
Yeah. Well, I say this all the time. I worry. I see this. This is kind of what leaves a trail of destruction. Honestly, I think with a relational destruction with couples is that this happens, that kind of just moving too quickly and not being able to kind of step back and say, maybe let me live to fuck another day, you know?
That needs to be on a bumper sticker.
Right. And let's just normalize that. Let's just completely normalize all of that. Because we all want to go into these situations and be healthy. We want to be, you know, feel secure. And we want to have healthy relationships, not only with the person we're entering it with, but for those of us who, you know, you're engaging with other people. So you are creating relationships with them too, even if it's one night. you're still creating relationships with them too. And there is an ethical consideration to be brought there as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to consider. And yes, it is heavy. Yes, you're going to fuck up. People are going to mess up. Lots of grace needs to be afforded to that. And don't forget, your partner is priority, and you have other human beings that you're engaging with too. So let's not forget that either.
I love that you brought that up, Jason, because that's something that we have said from quite early on in our experiences, is that, you know, when people talk about ethical non-monogamy, it can be interpreted many different ways. We have always said that we want to leave the people that we're engaging with in a better scenario, or a better situation than when we found them. So, you know, approach ethical communication for us, or ethical kind of relationships, is actually making sure that we're not overstepping the other couple's boundaries, that we're actually having really clear consent discussions, you know, that we are looking after, I mean, even STI health, all of those kind of things encompass that for me. So I love that you brought that into the conversation, because it is quite often missed out of these conversations, is that it's not just about me today. It's not about just about Daryl, but it's also about the other couple's relationship, their dynamic, and making sure that we're also looking after them. So yeah, kudos.
That's right.
Again, church music for Jason.
It's beautiful. Kate, it's beautiful. Yes.
Yes.
Now, who wants to go on the hot seat? Expansive Connection offer virtual coaching sessions to, as you said before, people in non-monogamy, considering non-monogamy, singles, couples, triads, polyquads, moresomes, you name it. We run the gambit of supporting people. Mm-hmm. Why would somebody turn to some virtual support rather than maybe just going down to their local GP and getting a referral to a psychologist locally?
It's a great question. Mainly because we haven't just read about this, we're also living it. And so you get the benefit of the educational background that we have, but you also get the fact that we are also trying the stuff we're telling you to do. It's because we probably told ourselves to do it on Monday. You know, we're telling you the things that work for us, that have worked for other people. The goal is to be a facilitator in your journey. It's not to tell you what to do. It's not to like delve necessarily into like your childhood. It's where you are now and where you want to go, and focusing on your goals and helping you to improve who you are currently. Like that's our goal.
I just wiped sweat off my forehead when you said we're not digging into childhood trauma. I don't know whether you saw that, but thank you. Speaking of resentment, let's get into today's second segment, which is about resentment. And I know even in Jason's example, in that first section, the break, the, you know, the gas, the brake, you said go slow, etc. I know that some of these things can even bring up resentment. You know, when you've got somebody who wants to go fast and then you've got somebody who's wanting to go a little bit slow, that can really create a lot of challenges within the lifestyle. So how we deal with resentment, misunderstandings, we're going to talk about conflict resolutions and tips for fostering a positive relationship environment. First question to really kick us off is, what are the common triggers for resentment in non-monogamous relationships specifically, and how can people navigate that?
That's a good question. Some of the ones I find the most are the gas and the brake. Somebody wants to go faster, somebody else wants to go slower. You also find that there are people who were like, I'm going to try it, and then they get into it and recognize this actually isn't for me. And their partner's like, I really enjoy all of this. What are you talking about? Now we have all these friends and these couples. And the other person's like, yeah, I did it because you were really into it. And I thought maybe at some point it would take off for me, and it just didn't. And so having to readjust or find a new normal that works for both of you can create a couple of resentment gardens on that journey. Yeah.
How would people navigate that then? I mean, to that example, how do you help that couple? I mean, what do you actually say to them to help them kind of get over this hurdle of, I want you to be sluttier on the weekend, Kate. Like, yeah, see those five guys? Like, go out and do the five guys. And I'm like, well, I kind of need to warm up a little bit. Maybe one guy is what I'm thinking. Like, how would you talk to us as a couple, or what techniques would you give me to navigate that?
One, I think kind of like what Jason's already mentioned previously, is when I think of E&M and the lifestyle or poly or anything else like that, I think of it as an accordion, and you get to be small and you get to be big and you get to go back. There's no like one note that you have to be at the entire time. And so, you know, there might be some time where one person on the weekend is all you can manage, and that has to be respected just as much as if, you know, it's Christmas time and you've been on a high and five guys in one night is like, sounds like the new quota, you know? both of those things have to be respected. Also, if you've had five guys a night for the last 2 years and your partner's like, we are living the life, and you're like, fun, you know, sometimes acknowledging that there might be some grief to how you thought it would go and giving space for that grief to be sad and disappointed in where you're at without it creating blame and pointing to your other partner. It's just, this is the space we're in right now.
And if there was a misunderstanding or there was a broken boundary, how would a couple go about rebuilding some of that trust? Like, what would you tell a client if they came in and they said, you know, we decided X tonight or at this event, you know, we could, like I said, we're going to a hotel takeover. We decided X and then Y happened. And then there's now all this mistrust. Maybe there's misunderstandings. You know, I went in and I promised I was going to be with five guys and then I was only with one, you know, can kind of swing the other way too. I think often we think there's this misunderstanding or breach of boundaries and it's always someone over pushing the limits. Sometimes it could also be the underway. So how would you help clients kind of rebuild that trust?
Rebuilding trust. Trust is often broken in egregious ways, possibly, but also trust can be broken because of uncommunicated expectations that people set up. And in, I think, especially in non-monogamy, and this is kind of going back to kind of bringing up to conscious. I mean, we unconsciously set up expectations for our lives, whether it's in relationship or whether it's just, you know, no matter what. And I think that is that's our default way of operating in the world. It's a survival mechanism. It allows us to make quick decisions and move through the world efficiently. And generally it works. It can work relatively well depending on what area of your life you're in. But when you're navigating, I think, non-monogamy or in particular, and external relationships or additional relationships, whether they're casual in a swinging space or whether they're more deep in more of like a poly type of space, the effort to continue to bring those elements to consciousness is really important because those expectations are still going to set in. So when you're navigating, I think just understanding that that's going to happen. I think there's a lot of like permission that we can give to people. You almost like permission to make a mistake, permission to kind of miss the boat. Doesn't mean that we did it intentionally. Doesn't mean that we wanted to hurt our partner. And learning how to offer grace for those mistakes can set the stage for what it's required to rebuild that trust to get us back to a new level, a new kind of baseline. Because you can't operate from the same baseline that you came in from monogamy. So if we start from there, out of the gate with offering that level of grace, hey, you messed up. I forgive you for that. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about the impact, how that hit me. So let's talk about how we're going to move forward next time. And having that level of open dialogue and going back into communication, having that a level of transparency that you haven't even necessarily done before, talking about those depths of feelings, talking about what kind of impact that had on your feelings of security within the context of your relationship. Those kinds of conversations can help to already set the stage for rebuilding that level of trust with your partner that then you are going to need to have some more experiences, some restorative experiences, like Miche had mentioned a while back about, you know, trusting, hey, when you come back, if you say you're going to come back in 15 minutes, if you agree to that, you need to do it because that, hey, you have to rebuild those. You have to put those credits back into the bank, if you will. So I think it's a multi-pronged process, setting the stage for rebuilding trust and then actually doing the actions that are required to rebuild that trust and build those credits back into the bank are kind of, it's like you kind of have to do both.
And throughout that, you just said, you know, offering grace, you just said actions, you know, for me, I think when I listen to both of you speak and I think, yes, this all sounds absolutely fabulous. And in this perfect world, this perfect relationship, you know, our lid hasn't flipped and we're being hyper intelligent and empathetic people and everything's going fantastic. What we know is that doesn't happen. And it's quite the opposite sometimes. So have you got any actual kind of hard and fast strategies or tips to offering grace, to creating that space where you can be supportive? Is there anything, again, help me, offer me some tips here. How can I physically do these things? It's great to hear about them, but how can I put them into practice? Is there anything I can do?
Well, one of the things I like to do is create repair throughout the whole journey. So if you're going to a hotel takeover or you're going to like a club, it's checking in with your partner before you guys even go there. And then it is checking in with your partner while you're there. And then it is checking in with your partner afterwards and debriefing with them. So there's like this continuity that happens throughout the entire engagement where you're still saying like, I'm your safe person. I'm your attachment person. I'm checking in with you to make sure that you're okay. And then no matter what happens, whether it's good, bad, sitting in curiosity, building trust, we are continually meeting back. Like I like to call it like rolling to the middle of the bed, you know, like we're continuing to come back to each other.
Vishay, that's perfect. Like I think that what I think about when you say that too are what are strategies that you can do on a regular basis that create the conditions for rebuilding trust when trust is broken? Because it's going to happen. That's another thing. It's like these kind of things are going to happen. So we can expect it. But then I think to Kate's point, well, what can we do along the way? What are some real practical kinds of things that we can do? And I love that metaphor of kind of coming back together. And what are some real practical strategies? You know, something in the more of the polyamory space that is pretty common is doing regular relationship check-in, which I think would be really valuable for even if for somebody in the swinging lifestyle who is just doing it occasionally. Maybe they just travel. Maybe it's like, you know, once every few months or something like that. You know, this new way of relating, even if it's on a casual level, is still going to have impact on your relationship. So if you can implement regular relationship check-ins with your you know, partner and just talking about how do we feel within the context of our relationship? You know, are we still at a place where we're wanting to do these things? Do we want to do some new things? You know, are there things that are coming up for us that we haven't had a chance to air? Are there resentments building up that we haven't had a chance to actually talk about? And now we're talking in a non-activated way. We're actually sitting down, scheduled time, where we are not activated to actually talk about some of these more vulnerable things. So I think not waiting till you're activated to bring up all of the stuff that has been, you might not even be aware was festering. Think about it throughout times of calmness and then bring it up during those times can help navigate those really murky waters that you are probably going to run into when you actually do go into those play spaces.
I love that, Jason, because basically you're saying we're supposed to create safe spaces throughout, like, just the lifespan of the relationship. So like, basically, I love how you're saying that, you know, we're creating this life space, this safe space while we're washing dishes, while we're doing laundry, while we're going to work.
Yes.
And then it also bleeds into when we go to play.
100%.
That's a great lead into my follow-up question, Vishay, because you just said while we're, you know, cooking, doing the dishes, doing laundry. I have something that years ago I used to tell people, and I want to know what the two coaches on the line think about this. I used to get asked by people, how do I bring up the lifestyle to my partner? And one of the things I always used to tell people is actually take yourself out of your home environment to a more neutral environment. And I meant that from the perspective of, okay, if I'm the home, more the homebody, I'm more the person doing the chores around the house, I'm not really in a sexy or, you know, interested to talk and really dig into my emotions mindset, it's more likely going to be better for me, both of us, in more of a neutral play, neutral space, cafe, bar, what have you. What would you think about that? I know, Jason, you just said that when you're non-activated, you know, talking, doing check-ins, what do you think about going outside of your home environment? Pro, con?
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I think your line of thinking, Kate, makes a lot of sense. You know, removing yourself from the almost the environmental space that, for better or for worse, sort of is a breeding ground for codependency. And you can't get away from it. You know, and I think in partnership, especially in kind of a mononormative world, you can't get away from that. So just kind of accepting that that's part of being in longtime partnership, that what we want to do is try to be aware of when it happens. You're right. I think, you know, bringing, especially when both partners have their roles, whether it's explicit or implicit, and you're just kind of going about your day within the context of your everyday life, bringing up something like you just said, you know, how do I bring this up to my partner? If you can take yourself out of that environment to an equally neutral and desirable spot for both of you, I think it allows the space for you to kind of show up as more as individuals outside of the context of your home.
Yep.
Whereas in the context of your home, you're less likely to have been differentiated as individuals.
Yeah. Or you've got that role play, like you said, you've got those.
Right.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's so great. But guess what? It's time to go back on the hot seat. You don't get off the hook that easily throughout the entire show. What are some of the signs that a couple in the swingers lifestyle or really in any alternative relationship might need to actually go and seek professional coaches? When is the time to seek help? We just mentioned, you know, a couple of examples that I gave you on my personal journey there. When would you recommend to somebody to come and actually have a conversation with a lifestyle coach?
I love this question because Jason and I were talking about this and we were both like, from the very beginning.
Yep.
From the time you decide to do this, maybe even before when you're still like questioning it, just because it's so helpful. I'm going to do like a shameless little plug here and say, like, going back to what we talked about previously about boundaries and how you show up in a relationship with boundaries. And we have a course that's going to be like 75 minutes through Zoom. It starts February 21st and runs through March 20th. It's like once a week. We have one of our other coaches, her name's Cal, and she's basically, oh my gosh, she's doing this whole study on a book and she's teaching it for everybody. And I'm so excited. So like little things like our study courses with groups or even self-study courses, or whether it's with coaches or whether you do it one-on-one and you guys do couples together later, making sure you have that extra support, because it's going to bring up stuff for you personally. And then it's going to bring up stuff for you as a couple. And sometimes you just want to air that stuff without your partner being there. And then sometimes you need to do the things that are together. And we offer all of that. So whether it's like skill building or having somebody to talk it through with, or building up like, oh, my boundaries are different than my partner's. What does this look like together from the very beginning? That's my answer.
And I know you just mentioned the boundaries course there, which is obviously going to, it's already kind of halfway through by the time this is coming out. I'm assuming that's going to be something that is available again in the future.
Yes, we'll have it recorded and it'll be offered as a self-study afterwards so people can take it as they like. But right now it's live, and I'm sure she'll do another live version of this probably later on in the year. But you can also, we always record ours to a certain extent so that you can then go ahead and do a self-study afterwards.
Now, devil's advocate here, pretending that I didn't know you exist, I'm 3 years into my lifestyle journey, I'm harboring resentment towards my partner, resentment towards my lifestyle journey. When do I then come and see you? You know, and we just said in a perfect world, I come and see you at the front. That's not possible right now in this scenario. Mm-hmm. When does it get beyond the ability for me to manage this with my partner?
I think at the point that you are more, this is kind of off the cuff here, more dysregulated in your relationship, like your body is, your nervous system is more dysregulated than regulated within your partnership, like when you're with your partner. So if we can strip away all these narratives you're like creating in your mind, they did this, they did that, you know, whatever. If we can kind of strip that away and just kind of keep it self-focused. If I don't feel safe in the same room and I don't feel calm and connected in the same room with my partner more often than not, and nothing is actually going on, you probably need to get in front of a therapist or a coach. I'm trying to think of things that to offer to say, what can I do as like, how am I going to know as a person? How am I going to know as an individual? Not what they're doing, not what my partner's doing. That's not the signal. What is the signal for me that I am going to need extra support? Mm. And that's something I kind of thought of is that dysregulated feeling, that anxious feeling, that heart rate always up, that like, I just can't feel safe within my own space with my partner. That's a good sign.
Or even the obsessive thoughts, like revisiting the same scene over and over again,
yeah.
Or revisiting the same thought that you feel like isn't processed just enough over and over again. Mm-hmm. Like if you're waking up at 2 a.m. in the morning, anywhere between 2 and 4 a.m. and like there's a singular thought that's continuing to repeat, that's probably when you reach out.
Yes.
Well, we've covered a lot today, everything from communication to resentment, misunderstandings, conflict resolution. So as we're getting ready to roll out of the episode today, could you perhaps share a piece of advice that might surprise or challenge conventional wisdom when it comes to addressing and resolving conflicts in the swingers lifestyle?
Ooh, an unexpected piece of advice.
I don't know if it's unexpected or not, but I'll just throw it out there because it's the first thing that popped into my mind is, okay. I don't know if I've mentioned it already, but you can only go as fast as the slowest person. So if we think about the context of how you're approaching your non-monogamy, how you're defining as a couple, how you want to approach this, you can only go as fast as the slowest person because you're attached. You have an attachment relationship here. And if the person is going too fast, you're stretching that attachment. And at some point it might risk breaking. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast, people.
Misha, any thoughts about resolving conflict?
Resolving conflict.
Get some ice cream and go for a walk.
Yeah. Like do the thing that makes you feel, do the thing that makes you feel good before you get heated with your partner, before you resolve all the things when hopefully, you know, they're not going anywhere. The fight's not going anywhere.
Yeah, true.
You're not going to forget all your pointers. Neither are they. Take care of yourself. What makes you feel like you're in your body? What makes you feel like you can have a calm conversation that allows you to show up in your values, right? If my values are honesty and authenticity, and I want to make sure that at the end of this conversation, you feel validated and loved. If I'm not in a position to do that with you, one, I'm going to warn you if you still want to have this conversation, that I'm not in the position to do that. So you enter at your own risk. And two, like I might pause this for a little bit and come back when I can, because the relationship house that we're living in is more important than this little tiny stove fire that we're going to put out anyway.
Fabulous advice. I love that. So thank you very much to Misha and to Jason from the Expansive Connection team for coming on the show. Really appreciate you both. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. This has been great.
Kate, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for the invite.
If you want more information about Expansive Connection, you can head to the show notes where I will have all of the website links as well as social media. I know that they do have great tidbits of information on their social media that are absolutely fabulous. I love reading them. So consider giving them a follow on social media. But this has been Swingers Health Volume 5, Part 1 for mental health, because yes, we are going to dig in more in a couple of weeks' time for a Part 2. So thank you again to the Expansive Connection team, and I look forward to chatting to you again soon.